There are handouts which should be making their way to the back. Does it look like there are enough back there for everybody? Because I have plenty more for the next group if we need some. Looks like we've got enough. The passages that we look at are going to be from here, but we also have some slides to help move along the presentation. You can see the title of the presentation is How the Doctrines of the New Church Make History, Civics, and Economics New. Is John King still here? Well, he helped me figure out a way to make this very short because he said, Brett, history's already happened. That can't be new. So I'm going to cut out history. We'll just talk about civics and economics because history's hard. No, we'll get into history. We'll get into history. But before we get into the substance of how history and civics and economics is new, I want to give you a little background about why this is a topic that we're going to look at. When I was placed in Kempton after theological school, Mark Winkle, who was the assistant principal, then came up to me and said, well, you know, we're adding this 11th grade and now 12th grade, and we need a U.S. history teacher. And I thought, well, I didn't spend a whole lot of time looking at U.S. history during theological school, but okay, I'll do it. So I started preparing that summer for teaching U.S. history and talked to Brian Henderson and all the people who I knew of. Actually, Cindy, I think I talked to you real briefly at some point, and then we followed up a little bit just a couple days ago. So I tried to chat with all the folks who had been teaching history to see what the New Church approach to history was. And then after doing that, went on my own little excursion that ended up taking most of the summer to prepare, just looking at the doctrinal basis for the study of history. And what I found was something that we should actually look at from biology to start with. So here is a pretty decent diagram, as far as I can tell, about how we see. You've got a coffee cup and then a lens and then the optic nerve and then the optic tract connected to the optic nerve and then all this stuff in the brain which interprets the image that comes in through the lens of the eye. So that's how we see, right? A little biology, that's how our eye functions. But actually, it doesn't work that way at all. Not even remotely, in fact. Particularly when we're looking at how all things are made new by the Lord. Because unless we see from our spirit first, out through our eye, we're not going to see anything at all. We're going to miss just about everything. So it's thought, this is just a well-known motto of New Church education, thought from the eye closes the understanding. But it's thought from the understanding which opens up the eye. And if you take a look at Arcana Celestia 1954, a passage that Stephen Cole brought to my attention in the clergy meetings a couple years ago, it is a tremendous passage because it sort of sets things up this way where you might say that we see from the eye, but it isn't the eye that sees. And then the Lord in that explanation takes it all the way back to the fact that it's the Lord that sees. None of us see. The Lord sees. So what is a New Church approach to history, civics, and economics? Well, it's an attempt to take the heavenly doctrine, what the Lord has made new for all of us, and see from it, see from the Lord in his second coming as we look at everything around us. So that's what we're going to try to do just a little bit, really just the tip of the iceberg with ways we can do that in looking at history and looking at civics and looking at economics. So let's get started. And there's going to be, during the course of this presentation, even though we're short on time, I think we'll still find an opportunity for some input from you all, because I hope to improve the courses that we teach as a result of the input I get from many of you who know far more about these subjects than I do. So please feel free to interject at any point if you have an idea that you want to share. So here are the goals. I think we'll accomplish the first one, maybe the second. If we're lucky, we'll have time to get into the third. But there's only just a tiny bit of economics we're going to look at anyway. So for history, what I hope we can do is, after looking at a few passages and chatting about a few examples, we can see how these three concepts, which are from passages in divine providence that we're going to look at in a minute, how when we look at history, we'll be able to see it in the context of these three ideas: equilibrium, relation or a related sequence or a contrast, and then purification. And why would we do this? Well, because if we can do this, then we're going to see that the Lord has been involved in everything that has ever happened, down to the most minute instances of everything. And what does that do? It gives us great confidence that the Lord's with us right now, and that he will be with us tomorrow, and the next day, and every day to eternity. So if we can look back at history and see him there, we can look at ourselves now at any given moment, whatever type of situation we're in, happy, sad, glad, or mad, and know that the Lord is right there too. So history can actually be a tool to more readily be conjoined with the Lord, because we'll have a better understanding of how he is here with us right now. And by the way, the more facts that you know about history, the more stories you know about the context that those facts took place in, the better you can understand the Lord's presence there. So it's a really cool way of dates, learning dates and trends and major events, because they're not just in a textbook, they're actually in the context of the Lord's divine providence. So for civics, and by the way, each one of these subject matter categories, there are many different ways, an infinite, probably, number of ways we could look at them from a New Church perspective, and this is just one. So for civics, there's a wonderful doctrine that I've been taking a little bit more time to look at recently, called the common good. And we're going to look at how, if we analyze our government from what the Lord teaches about what creates the common good in a kingdom, we can be better citizens. And then finally, with economics, this is in some ways the hardest one, but once you start seeing it from the heavenly doctrine, from the Lord's perspective, it might be the most obvious one. So I hope we have time to get to just two passages on economics. Economics is really the study of loves and how we effectuate our love. So we'll get to that a little bit more. That maybe sounds the newest of all, perhaps. So let's get started with history. How history is made new, even though, as John pointed out, it's all already happened. So this is Webster's definition of history: the branch of knowledge that deals systematically with the past, a recording, analyzing, correlating, and explaining of past events. Is everybody okay with that? Anything missing from that? Could be. I looked at several definitions, and this seemed like the broadest one, the most inclusive one. But anything missing in there that you think? Could be. Everyone okay with that as a working definition of history? So what would the New Church definition of history be? This is where we're going to take a look at a couple of passages and then look at a possible definition of New Church history based on just a couple of passages. If you look at page 2 in the handout, I'll just read Divine Providence 187 and Divine Providence 212. It is granted man to see the divine providence in the back and not in the face, also to see it in a spiritual state and not in his natural state. So we can see it in history, and we can see it if we're thinking spiritually. To see the divine providence in the back and not in the face is to see it after it occurs and not before, and to see it from a spiritual and not from a natural state is to see it from heaven and not from the world. So seeing it not with our eyes, but with our understanding from the Lord, which will help us look at it from a spiritual perspective, which really is the lasting perspective. So that's one part of what seems like an appropriate working definition of history from a New Church perspective. Divine Providence 212. The divine providence is in the least particulars of man's thoughts and actions. The least particulars. But we can't see it while it's going on, because if we did, we wouldn't feel free. As the divine providence is in the least particulars of things so insignificant and trifling, like how long it took you to get out of bed this morning, insignificant and trifling, but the Lord's divine providence is there. By the way, I should step back. Divine providence, the Lord's providing. That's what it is, the Lord's presence. In Apocalypse Explained, it simply says the divine providence is the Lord's presence. So him with us, is one way of understanding the Lord's divine providence. But why should it then not be in the least particulars of things not insignificant and trifling? And think of all the not insignificant and trifling things we've talked about so far. Like the Last Judgment occurring, and all of the things that occurred just in the course of 1 year for the Last Judgment to happen. All of the major doctrines that Derek talked about in conjugal love, that one passage. All of the things that have happened in the very short history of the new church since the Last Judgment and since the Second Coming was complete in 1770. It's in all of those things that are not insignificant and trifling. And it's also in the affairs of peace and war in the world and salvation and life in heaven. So particularly where it says the affairs of peace and war in the world, we can see a wide open door for looking at providence in the context of history. All right, so here's my shot at a new church definition of history based on these two passages and several other ideas of divine providence, but it's not too different than Webster's. The branch of knowledge that leads to that deals systematically with seeing the presence of the Lord's providence in the past, a recording, analyzing, correlating, and explaining of past events in light of the Lord's continual presence. So if we're thinking spiritually, 187 of Divine Providence says we can see providence in the past. So if we study history in the new church, and this, by the way, is not just something to do in school, but if you have an interest in history and you like to read biographies or like to read history or read the newspaper, you're going to see history almost everywhere that you look. And when you do, look for this. How was the Lord there? How was he there?
Brett?
Yes. Now, I'm an optimistic guy, Andrea, but I agree with you, and we might even say that most of history is pretty bad. I'm not a glass half-empty kind of guy, but look, let's be honest, there's a lot of bad stuff that us humans have done to each other, and a lot of terrible things that have happened. So actually, what we're going to focus on mostly is a view of those evil things that we have done to each other and how the Lord uses those. Because in some ways, it's a lot more interesting in history to look at that stuff than the other things, maybe. So we're going to get exactly to that. I'm so glad that you asked that question. But to do it, we need to look at these concepts, equilibrium, relation, and purification. And we get back to our passages here. It's a series in the very beginning of divine providence. Before we get to the laws of divine providence, we have this explanation, which is all about helping us understand how the Lord can use evil in a positive way. So anytime you read a headline about something bad happening, or read a history of something bad that happened, which every war is, we can use these concepts to see how it's the Lord actually right there using these things, using even these bad decisions to go in a good direction. So let's start with Divine Providence 21. It's 21 through 26. And again, please feel free to interrupt and interject questions as we go along. Divine Providence 21. The divine providence of the Lord causes what is evil and at the same time false to serve for equilibrium, relation, and purification. And so for the union of good and truth in others. So that is a general answer to the question about what do we do with the evil in history? Well, if we understand what equilibrium, relation, and purification is, which we're going to look at for the next few minutes, we can use those concepts to look at history and see how it can help us wed good and truth in our own decisions going forward. From what has been said, it may be evident that the divine providence of the Lord is continually operating to unite truth to good and good to truth in man, because this union is the church and is also heaven. For this union is the Lord and in all things that proceed from him. However, as many have broken and are breaking this marriage, the marriage of good and truth, especially by the separation of faith and charity, and as they thereby unite in themselves evil and falsity, and have thus become and continue to be opposed to good and truth, nevertheless, the Lord provides that they shall still be of service for the union of good and truth in others, by means of equilibrium, relation, and purification. So, what other people do, and by the way, even ourselves, can help bring about the union of good and truth. So first, let's start with equilibrium, Divine Providence 23. The union of good and truth in others is provided by the Lord by means of the equilibrium between heaven and hell. Matthew mostly talked about the process that reestablished the equilibrium that was perishing before the last judgment. The equilibrium being, I don't really think of it as a balance, although that concept is useful, but really what it is what we need in order to make a choice. We don't need a whole lot of evil to be able to choose it, I don't think. Just a little bit of evil is enough to be able to choose it. So it's not like you need 50% evil, 50% good. You just need enough to be able to make a choice. And the good, the truth, was becoming so obscure by those false heavens that Matthew described that equilibrium, the ability for human beings on the earth to make the choice, was disappearing. So in order for evil to be helpful to us through the Lord's providence, we need to first be able to have an equilibrium in relation to that evil, be able to make a choice in relation to that evil. So for there is a constant emanation from hell of evil and falsity together, but from heaven there is a constant emanation of good and truth together. In this equilibrium, every man is kept as long as he lives in the world, and thereby kept in the liberty of thinking, willing, speaking, and doing, in which he can be reformed. So that's the equilibrium which the Lord ensured would exist to eternity after the last judgment. The emanation from heaven of good and truth and from hell of evil and falsity, so we can make a choice. But how do we make the choice? And this is a set of passages that I've been having more and more fun beginning to understand. Because it involves, I think because it involves an adversarial process, which I have a little bit of affection for. The union of good and truth is provided for by the Lord by means of relation. Or contrast is another way the Latin word here has been translated, or even a related sequence. I think contrast and relation are the most helpful ideas when thinking of this concept. For the quality of good is known by its relation to what is less good, and by the opposition it meets from evil. There must be variation in everything, from its greatest to its least, and as there is also variation in its opposite, from its least to its greatest, with equilibrium in between. So when we are in equilibrium, that means we have good and truth emanating from heaven, we have evil and falsity emanating from hell, and we're able to compare them. We can look at one, we can look at the other, we stand in between, and we can make a choice on which way we're going to go. That's the equilibrium and relation part of it. And really, that's what rationality is. In the word rationality is the word ratio, which means comparing one thing to another. So the Lord establishes the equilibrium for us, gives us a rational mind at which we can compare, at which we can contrast and figure out opposites. By the way, gray disappears when we use our rational mind to see what's from heaven and what's from hell. We can't make a choice between heaven and hell when we see something as gray. It's the process of being able to identify opposites that allows us to make a choice. a social commentary for a moment, if you'll indulge me. It is, I don't think any coincidence that the book 50 Shades of Grey is named by that title. Because if we don't see the opposite and competing viewpoints from heaven and hell from which to make a decision, then we're going to be at best paralyzed in the middle, or at worst, making a choice that isn't based on a rigorous, rational approach to what we're doing, but one which can still develop an evil love in us. Okay, so we've got an equilibrium in between the opposing forces. And we're going to get to history soon, I promise. Because remember, this is how the Lord uses evil to help us. The union, now we're on page 5, which is Divine Providence 25. The union of good and truth in others is provided for by the Lord by means of purification. Now, I'm going to skip ahead to the bold part here, where it says, and this is in reference to a concept of fermentation that occurs in the world. Now, there are evils together with falsities which, when introduced into societies, act like ferments put into meal and juice of the grape. By means of these, discordant things are separated, and concordant things are united, and purity and clearness are the result. Something to hold on to that will come back in a minute. When introduced into societies. So when evils and falsities are introduced into societies through human decisions, those things can act as a fermenting agent, which actually bring about purity. Because we can look at those things and have from the Lord the opposing good and truth and make a decision. These uses are provided by the Lord from the union of evil and falsity in those who are in hell, and the providence of the Lord provides that there shall not be in it any person or thing that does not perform or serve as a use. So hopefully we now can have a general, or maybe even more than just a general understanding of these terms, of equilibrium, relation, and purification, and then we'll see the use that the Lord puts to evil in the context of history that will then help us see and have confidence in his guiding and everything that happens. So equilibrium, that's us in the middle between opposing views, which is the relation, and then the purification is what happens when we make the choice between the two. So I want to see if we can come up, maybe we have, we'll take one or two perhaps. And I'll give a couple maybe to prime the pump a little bit. But when you look at U.S. history, specifically, just because that's what I've been teaching and there are examples through all of history everywhere, can you think of a process, a trend, over as short or long a time period as you choose, in which, because the Lord has an equilibrium that he's created for us to operate in, opposing viewpoints society-wide came to the consciousness of a community or a nation, and choices were made, and a better result occurred. I saw Derek and I saw Jamie were the first two hands.
Slavery.
Slavery! Was that yours, Jamie? Anyone? Who's got another one? Maddie, was that your hand up? Anyone besides, anything else besides slavery?
Great Depression.
Great Depression. We're not in the Great Depression anymore, are we?
The American Indian Wars.
Ooh. Interesting. Can you tell me, can you give me just a minute about that?
Battle of Wounded Knee, it was called the Battle of Wounded Knee, but now it's more widely known as the massacre of Wounded Knee, when the U.S. troops just massacred Indians who had basically laid down their arms.
I might have to get with you afterwards to show me how that seems like choices were made. And the purification result, I just don't know enough about how that played out. But I have a sense tour that you do, and I'd love to hear more about that. One more, and then I want to...
I'm not sure this is as thorough, but Pearl Harbor is a turning point in American decision to be a part or be a stand-apart.
We definitely made that choice to get involved in the Pacific Theater after Pearl Harbor because of that event, for sure. Allison? Okay.
Go
ahead.
very center looking, like, gotta make sure that I don't get killed and I don't die. And as the colonies expanded, they realized they actually needed to form a unity and look out for each other.
And here we are today. Yeah, yep. Connected to slavery. Connected to something. I think those last two points are connected to this. Read the Declaration of Independence and 27 injuries and usurpations. They're pretty extreme. If you read through them, they are pretty extreme. England's a good friend of ours now, and I don't want to get into contemporary politics at all, but just read the Declaration, and what they claim was happening from the British Crown was pretty terrible.
Yeah.
Pretty terrible. And our nation was the result of these choices being made. Yeah, Mike.
Even the whichever amendment it is that abolishes cruel and unusual punishment.
The Eighth Amendment.
But it's nice to have that because you see even now there's a lot of people that don't believe that and don't subscribe to that.
Oh, we could look at all of the Bill of Rights and if we had a course to spend together, we would do that. Right, Bennett? All right, we talked about that one. My goodness. Look at this one. And until those evils came up, it says introduced into societies. Look at the evils that were introduced into the Western world so that choices could be made, that nations could spend their time and treasure and blood to have a result that is more pure. By the way, this is why it's so important to learn and teach history so we don't have to fight these fights again. So we can tell our children, this is what these people did to other human beings. I'm sorry?
If only.
Yeah, if only. But that's why it's and by the way, church history too. I mean, all of these principles apply to all of the things Bradley was talking about yesterday as well. That would be a fun thing to look at, but let's stick with U.S. history. You might be surprised, or maybe not, but a lot of people born in the 90s and later really don't understand what Soviet communism involved. I was having a great conversation with Becca. Maybe she'll be here for the second class, but she was doing a master's level study into how the United States was actually supporting religion of all kinds all over the world wherever Soviet communism was getting pushed, because the U.S. government and the CIA realized that if God was believed in, communism would fail. So this was Islam, this was Christianity, this whatever it was, wherever the encroachment was. So that was there's so many levels of infiltration of ideas from hell and a recognition of ideas from heaven, which were contrasted and chosen. The civil rights movement. This was a Christian movement, by the way. I don't know how much you all have studied that one, but it was a Christian movement, and it was expressly Christian. The more you look at it, and if you just listen to Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, there's scriptural quotations throughout the whole thing. It is a tremendous example of some of the most horrible things still lasting after a civil war was fought that are then being looked at and compared and contrasted and overcome. And there are all sorts of obviously things that continue to come from the travesties of the founding of the nation, those travesties in relation to race relations. But think about this. As much as we want to rail, or I should speak for myself, rail on societal norms and the crumbling of the social mores, is racism socially acceptable anymore in the nation? What a wonderful result. It depends where you are. Fair enough. In the nation, not in a specific community. But if we take a national view of the culture of the United States of America, if that's possible, it's not accepted. It certainly, there are places and pockets where it's still a problem. But if the light of truth is shined on them, then the nation will say, uh-uh. Now remember, I am an optimistic guy.
How did I mean your optimism? I was going to say, yeah. I saw that civil rights and I went, yeah, but.
Still ongoing.
It's been taken. No, I'm saying. Oh. I'm saying sometimes they say, yeah, we need civil rights for blankety blank.
Ah.
And they push it too far. And
should we talk about blankety blank for a minute?
No.
Sorry. Sorry, Jennifer. Sorry. So we can look at ones that have. Yes, go ahead, Dr. Baker.
Could you just go back a slide?
Yeah.
And maybe you're going to deal with this kind of thing.
Okay.
Go on. But I'm just sort of looking at all those things, and it seems to me that we're all saying, oh, a decision was made, and kind of the best part one sort of thing, which is probably true. But I'm just, if you look at each one of those, there were a lot of things that went on that I think you could discuss under process of purification that were very difficult. For instance, in the Revolutionary War, you had a tremendous amount of civil war between down in the South, guerrilla warfare, very bad things that their people's neighbors did to each other and so forth. Similarly, in the northern part of what was in the American colonies, you know, you had a lot of people leave, you know, basically leaving their house or whatever to go north. Loyalists, and I think that was not a happy process. I mean, I don't think they necessarily left because, oh, gee, the grass is greener over there. They left because I don't like it here. These people are bad. They're doing whatever. So if you go through each one of those things, I think you will find a lot of things that happened that weren't good things that happened. And it might be interesting in the context of what you're trying to do with your students or whatever to talk about some of those difficult things in each one of those things and how that went and where Providence was in that, where permission was and so forth.
It's a great thought. It is a great thought. And we do that. If you look at the Constitution of the United States of America, you had within that wonderful document some atrocious civil rights violations. In the document itself, the Three-Fifths Compromise, which counted population for the purposes of representatives and counted slaves as three-fifths of a person. Yep. You had the Fugitive Slave Clause in the Constitution itself. And then you had the legal protection for the slave trade until the year 1808 in the Constitution itself. And so we look at things like that and look at how those individual provisions of this great document are actually evidence of good, of evil and falsity compared to their opposing goods and truths that even from the birth of the nation set the stage for another purification process. So you're absolutely right, and it's in the least particulars. Divine providence is in the least particulars. So the more we look at individual days of history, the more we're going to find, I think, more and more evidence of how the Lord takes every single evil that comes up and we'll wrap it up into this process. Stephen.
I just add the scriptural image of conquering something little by little, though. The Lord doesn't just make a clean sweep. Yeah. That each of these involves, as you say, all these little particulars, and it doesn't happen all at once, and some of it gets accomplished, but there's still enemies in the land that need to be expelled.
Yeah, yep. And it even may seem like we take steps back after we take a step forward. Okay, I think I'm going to have to just run through these myself so we can talk a little bit about civics and economics. So not only is it the rose-colored glasses of, oh, we're all done with all of those because we're now in the purification state of those, but as Dr. Baker points out, there's a lot of things along the way that bring up whole new processes of the Lord's providence guiding things, even through the course of maybe a prior loop of providence that has led to progress. But what things are we in the middle of? Boy, we could go on and on and on. I think I have four up here, one of them which touches on yours, Jennifer. We have rogue dictators all over the world, not all over the world, but plenty of places to make us wonder about how that's going to be resolved. Well, we know it'll be through equilibrium, relation, and purification. We just don't know what that's going to look like and how much of the evil and falsity we're going to have to weather before the Lord can use that to come to a better result. Terrorism, certainly. The redefinition of marriage, I think, Jennifer, maybe this is what you were getting at. Marriage is under assault today. But look, if we hadn't had the second coming occur, do you think we'd be having the fight we were having on marriage? Do you think that the human race, I don't think, has been ready for this fight ever? since the ancient church. So this is how optimistic I am. I think this is actually a great indication of the second coming. Because we got to fight this fight. We're ready. What's that? Inject into societies, it said. These are pretty well injected into societies. I think we're ready to start to talk about them. Yeah. Yeah. Oops, keep hitting the wrong button. Religious freedom, this is a fun one to think about, but it's interesting, at least in the United States. Actually, I know Canada had that hate speech legislation that was passed. Maybe our religious liberties are under assault too, probably connected to the one right before that, and we'll see how that all plays out. But man, that's a fun one to think about. Taney.
I think also when you're missing is the plight of women in the third world.
I'm missing just about everything.
Yes.
Yeah, but certainly an appreciation and understanding of the masculine and the feminine. Yeah. Where are we in that one yet? Are we at the, I don't know if, I think it's connected to the definition of marriage. That's going to be.
It's huge.
It is huge.
The redefining of marriage.
Charlene.
This might be a little bit off, but I just got a notification. Trump, transgender individuals not allowed to serve in any capacity in the U.S. military.
Now, what I'm going to do with that one is because we've mentioned a contemporaneous political figure. And I would hate for my use to ever be affected by being associated with a particular political approach. I will just leave that one lie for now. And if anyone wants to have a private conversation, I'd love to have it. But that is evidence of something somewhere in this process. And now we can wonder about it and be part of the relation and purification process. So thank you for bringing that one up. Hopefully you can't read the newspaper the same way as you could 45 minutes ago now. All right, boy, you can see how much fun we could spend with this, but hopefully what you can see is that the Lord's there guiding all of it. The worst things that have happened in the history of the human race and the worst things that are going to happen and the things that you're going to read about in the paper tonight and see on your favorite web source for news are all part of this same process. So even though it's already happened, maybe you can see that it's new. Yeah. Our individual decisions is how the Lord effectuates this process. Yeah. Yeah. Aurora.
When I think about divine providence, I think somebody in college had talked about it being like everything that people choose is within the Lord's watch. You know, nothing is outside of the Lord's. You know, we can't do anything without the Lord knowing about it or seeing it. But all the bad things that we see in history, I think that's never the Lord's will. It's always I do think also that people didn't tend to write a whole lot about when times are good. Like, you don't say every day that there wasn't an invasion or people fighting. Like, when things are good, you kind of forget about the Lord sometimes.
Yeah.
Not always, but, I don't know. I try to remember, though, that when we do look at things, that permission and that kind of thing, I never want to think of it as, oh, the Lord wanted these bad things to happen. Because people could have made different choices, but they didn't.
Yep. Yeah, it's to protect our freedom, but even to protect our freedom in such a way that only what will happen can be part of this process too. It's amazing the Lord can do that. If we tried to figure it out, can you think of how quickly we'd mess that up? Amazing. Okay. I'm not going to read the passages on page 6 and 7 because Bradley touched on them yesterday, but it's the big picture. And this is the big picture in regard to the nature of the revelation that the Lord's given us, starting with the most ancient down to the ancient, then down to the Hebrew, Israelitish, Christian, and new. And then this is a trend. I tried to graph it. I'm sure there are all sorts of problems with this graph, but I think it's a trend that if you look at those two passages, I think it's at least a fair, if not arguable, attempt to depict it. But so we are up at the new church end as far as what's available to us to use in this relation process. So we've touched on it already, and I don't want to spend any more time on it since there's only 3 minutes left and we still have to do civics and economics. But there might be a lot more things available to us now, actually there is, that the Lord can use in his providence toward progress. Okay, that's history. Civics, I'm just going to move very quickly through this. We probably know Webster's, but this is what we can do in the new church. We can look at political science and civics, affairs, rights, and duties of citizens and see how they can serve the common good of the nation. So what's the common good? If you take a look at page 8, we've got a great definition of the common good. Well, great because it's from the Lord, but there are 8 points of it. It is in any society or kingdom, what is divine there, what is just there, what is moral, and that there's industry, knowledge, and uprightness, and then the next 4 relate to the necessaries of life being provided. So when we look at any government system, there are some Canadians here, most of the rest are United States. I think it's the only 2 nations we have present at Jacobs Creek. Maybe someday we'll have more than just the US and Canada here. But any government system, we can evaluate it against these 8 points. And we can say, is it serving these 8 points? And where it isn't, we can say to ourselves, what can we do to change it so it is serving those 8 better? So 5 questions we can ask ourselves. Do we have what is divine among us? And is the government facilitating that or hurting that? We have the First Amendment in the United States. That's a pretty darn good start for a government facilitating what is divine among us as far as the protections of religious liberties. What is just? The 5th, 6th, 8th amendments of the Constitution go along, the 4th Amendment, are all incredible protections if you're ever a criminal defendant. That's all justice. Morality, when it says industry, knowledge, and uprightness, I looked at the Latin, I think we can think of, are there people with a good work ethic who know what they're doing and you can trust them? What is the government's role, if any, in supporting that sort of nation? And then all of the necessities, is the government system that your nation has in place something that allows for the necessaries of life to be provided for? So anytime you look at civics, you can go to the common good and the definition of the common good and evaluate what you're doing in your system of government to effectuate the common good. And if there's something missing, figure out how to change it. Economics. All right, we'll go 30 seconds over on economics. Is that okay? It's 10 o'clock. Okay, so just 2 passages on this one. That which a man loves and that which he wills, this he has as his end. It's really about our ruling loves. Just think for yourself, what was the last thing you purchased? The very last thing, the most recent thing you purchased that you bought or engaged in any sort of exchange to obtain. Because that's economic activity, a purposeful exchange.
I think it was purchased gasoline.
Gasoline. Okay, there's a great example. Your love was related to that purpose. Something you love was related to that purpose. Maybe it was getting you to Jacob's Creek because you love Jacob's Creek. There you go. That's a great example. The most insignificant thing that you purchase is related to something that you love. As long as you are making a purchase from free will, every single exchange that you engage in of an economic nature will be related to your loves. So there is so much we can look at then from a new perspective in economics if we think about it that way. So it's a science that deals with how our loves order the making, distributing, selling, and purchasing of goods and services. And the last passage, we just talked about this one. The last passage to look at that we have on here is, this is amazing. So I was looking at how am I going to teach economics from a New Church standpoint, and I come across this one on page 10. By uses, goods are meant. And therefore, doing uses means doing goods, and doing uses or goods means serving others and ministering to them. And then I looked down at the chapter I was looking at, and it had something to do with goods and services. I said, well, this is what goods and services are. That's why we call them that. We don't even know, but that maybe we do now. That's why goods and services are called goods and services. So we can learn an awful lot about our macro economy by what we make and what we do for each other. And then evaluate what that says about our loves, individually and collectively. So there we have it. History, civics, and economics made anew. It's 10 o'clock. If you are... If you're in a discussion group or have time to do that, there are a list of questions, many of which we talked about in the last two pages of the handout. All right. Thanks, everybody.